two voices. Unedited, uncut, unfiltered, unflappable. Bringing you glory to the green. Representing One Nation. Mean Green Nation. It's time for the Mean Green Nation podcast.
Yeah, that's our new little intro that we have, courtesy of Mr. Greg Godecker. Why don't you tell us a little story about that, Greg, before we get started, because if you want to have questions, I think.
Well, you know, I just felt like I needed to do a professional voiceover for our show, so I got in the movie studio, you know, the recording studio that I have set up in the bathroom, and just went to town on it, created something unique for us, and have a little fun.
I'm sure that's exactly what happened. Ladies and gentlemen, as the big voice guy said, this is the Mean Green Nation podcast. This is episode 41. And I mean, regardless of episode numbers, I mean, you go back to one, you're not going to really, you know, listen to it, you're not going to really understand what's going on. Mostly because, you know, we're talking about current events. It's a current event type podcast. And the most current event right now is that it's August. It's almost time for some Mean Green football.
Yeah, Greg. Camp starts on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, mostly, it's like a, it's like, I guess what baseball fans, you know, get excited about, you know, everybody's, there's the opportunity for, anything to happen, really, is what the thing is. Like, I was looking at the soccer just started, right, and a bunch of teams that sucked are playing pretty well this season. And, I mean, it's fair to say that North Texas kind of sucked last year, 4-8, it was a 4-8, right?
Yeah.
Coming off a season, a bowl season, everybody was expecting something good, like not something decent, not bad. And what we got was bad and embarrassing, disappointing, lots of things. Is that, see, they just go right, hit it right away. Is that what's going to happen this season?
No, I don't think so. I think last year we had a lot of young people. We lost a lot of people. So we had the idea that the guys that were going to replace the senior class that we lost was going to be good. Like, there was a lot of talent that we thought could step right in and play. But as we learned, you know, they just weren't up to par. Our quarterback situation, it was bad all year long. And, I mean, we just were never able to, you know, get ahead of steam. We were never able to get the running game going. We were never able to find the quarterback. And our defense, you know, they played okay at times, but they struggled too. So I think this year you're going to see a lot more experienced players get in there. And, you know, we should be better. They should be better. The record may be the same, but we should play better.
You know, that's the kind of thing that's what I'm talking about. Like, we should you know, things are different this time. Things should be better. Things should. I mean, you could make that same argument. I know I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here. I'm just talking. But last year we kind of said the same thing. Like, you know, we should probably be good. I mean, despite all those guys leaving, a lot of these guys are in the program. We have the same coaches. We have returning guys at quarterback. We got this guy. He did well in JUCO ranks. He should be pretty good this time. I like to say that there is no should. There is no should.
Right.
And that's good and bad, you know? Like, for, say, like our mini rival there, UTSA, was going into last season saying, well, this should be our year. This is the year that all these guys that were in program are seniors now, you know, blah, blah, blah. We should, like, go undefeated. And then they had a terrible season also. That happens. I kind of like the uncertainty of this year where everybody has to be hungry. I think Kenny Byers, on the little Conference USA, I guess, like, I don't even know what to call that. It's like little media day. Yeah, media day.
Yeah, media day.
But specifically the American Sports Network interview with Ron, what's his name? Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. It's on their site. Yeah. But he said, you know, like, we're hungrier this year. We're, you know, being more showing more leadership qualities this year, meaning him and some of the older guys. In that they're not letting anybody slack or this, that, and the other. Doing things the right way is really what they said a lot of times. I'm not sure exactly what that means. But, you know, they're on it. They're more committed this year. I think you kind of have to be. You'd like to see that. When you get punched in the mouth, you like to see somebody kind of get up and, you know.
Fight back.
Yeah. And hopefully the 2015 season is a fight back kind of season.
Right. I agree with you. So are you one of those fans that when we get into, you know, the new season, that you kind of just forget about what happened last year, all hope and optimism going forward with the new season? Are you kind of cautiously optimistic, or you're just like negative Nancy and you're like, we sucked last year and we got McNulty as our quarterback and we're just going to suck this year? So where do you lay?
I think in college football, it's hard to have momentum season to season because there's so much turnover. And these guys are so young, you know. It's an 18-year-old guy, 19-year-old guy, you know, to 22, 23. I guess if you're rooting for BYU, it's like a 25-year-old guy. But, I mean, they're all really young. And so, you know, like a guy comes in, he's 19, and maybe he gets it, he doesn't get it, he shows flashes, or maybe he achieves his potential, he reaches his potential, fulfills it. Whatever verb you want to use there. But, you know, a lot of that's kind of there's a big change. You go from, you know, just think about yourself. Sorry, there's a lot of background stuff going on where I live. There's like a festival going on. There's a lot of change from when you're 19 to 22. And so, you know, you might have a guy on the roster and you think he's all right, but then all of a sudden he just turns into a beast. You know, he's just a monster. And you're like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? Well, it just kind of happens. And so even though you already had him, there's no telling that he's going to be that good. Look at all these JUCO guys that either couldn't make the roster or were a little undersized or had one or two things, and they go to junior college and they show out, and then they're, you know, major forces on a program that they weren't being considered for later on.
Right.
So I guess to answer your question, no, I don't think, oh, well, last year they sucked, this year they should suck. I mean, you know, it's all a guessing game, really. There are some trends. Did they recruit good players? I think I have a lot of issues with the way Brett Vito analyzes football, but I think one of the things he gets right is, generally speaking, you know, an individual recruit could be good or bad, hit or miss. But if you get a lot of guys that are considered by the consensus to be pretty good, you'll probably be pretty good. And so you got to look at that, the recruiting coming in.
Especially when you're picking recruits from Texas. If you're getting highly recruited guys in Texas, you know, like, you know, Billy C likes to say, you know, how many offers does a guy have? And who are those offers from? If we're getting guys that have multiple offers from large schools and then they're highly ranked on these recruiting websites, you know, 3 stars, maybe we land a 4-star, you know, those are, you know, that we're getting good players then.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, generally, I think ideal prototypical North Texas offense or North Texas roster is going to be made up of like weird guys, like tweeners, guys that don't fit your traditional mold for like big time college football. I guess, like, you know, height, weight requirements, maybe even some speed requirements. And so I think like guys that would be lower, they would still get offers like, you know, like maybe you can play safety for Texas, but you're not going to play whatever position you want to play. Or maybe you could, you know, maybe you have to play, you know, like something else, but you can't play middle linebacker because you're not big enough. But you can play at North Texas because, you know, we don't mind that you're 5'9". We've had a bunch of short, squatty little linebackers out here that have, you know, dominated the awards list in Conference USA and the Sun Belt and other leagues that we've been in. I mean, that's the ideal lineup. And yeah, you're right. You don't want just a guy like, well, he's small, so he should be good because we've had some good small guys before. You want guys that other people think are good, but maybe don't fit, I guess, like their predefined height and weight requirements kind of thing. I don't know. That's to me. That's what my ideal, like, I think the ideal North Texas off. We don't have the pull to be like, yeah, we're going to get 6'5", you know, rocket arm quarterback over here. We're going to get like maybe the skinny guy with a pretty decent arm, that kind of thing. You know?
All right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think you may fall into the category then of, are you just recruiting as many talented guys as you can and trying to fit them in your system? Or are you Dan McCartney and you say, I have a system and these are the type of guys I need? And then if you're that way, like McCartney probably is, and now you have to step outside your comfort zone and you're like, well, I got to go get somebody that can play because I can't get the guy that I want. then, I mean, it almost seems like you're not really building the program that the way that you want it to. You're just doing what you have to maybe try and win. I don't know.
Well, yeah, if you look, I mean, yeah, I think you have to do that. If you look at any sport and anything, all the lower the organizations, the small teams that don't have the resources to do things like the bigger teams, you gotta, you know, do what you can with what you have. And that means being flexible. That means thinking outside the box. I mean, the spread offense was, you know, they figured out how to do that kind of stuff. Or, like, it really had its genesis in, like, some of the smaller colleges, and it made its way up. Now you're seeing it at Auburn and Alabama and all these big schools. But, you know, it was, you know, Northwestern with a bunch of their brainiac, undersized guys just whooping up all over Michigan in 1995. I was like, what is that? That's not how you play football. Michigan was lining up in a 4-3 still when Northwestern had four or five wide receivers out there. Now, that's, obviously, they'd match up now. But, you know, at the time, it was revolutionary. But Northwestern had to think outside the box. And, you know, they were pulling ideas from some of the smaller colleges, some of the JUCO ranks and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, like, even 335, right? That was a small college innovation. These kinds of things you have to do with what you have. And if you're stuck in this mindset, like, well, you know, a quarterback is 6'5", you know, 240 pounds with a rocket arm. Well, I think all those guys are snapped up already. So maybe you have the guy that fits that size, but he can't really play quarterback at the level you need him to. And then over here you got a 6-foot guy, you know, with great decision making, but he just can't really see over the line. You know, what are you going to do? There's your decision.
Right. So, and I think North Texas is doing that, but I think the problem that they're having is they're getting these players in that are talented and they can do things, mm-hmm. but they're not moving their offense to fit those players' true skill sets. So we may have a small fast guy, or we may have a small guy that can block on the offensive line, but we're still trying to ram it down people's throats. It's like we're always, is what it seems like. It's like our offense, we're 2 years behind the trend.
Yeah.
You know, our recruiting game, our uniform game, everything we seem to be behind, we're trying to play catch up here.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I think I was saying the same thing, you know, that's one thing I thought we were right on the cusp of when we got Todd Dodge in here. He was going to throw around the football and it was going to be great. The problem with that was that we just took a big swing and a miss. I appreciate the attempt at the home run, but wow, did we, you know, mess that one up really, really bad. I mean,
I wish that Todd Dodge would have been able to be like a Chad Morris or Malzahn, come from high school, go be a coordinator somewhere, and then come to North Texas. Don't come straight from high school and get the head job, because he wasn't ready for it. He wasn't ready to handle all the day-to-day operations. He didn't bring the correct coaching staff. If he would have gone to a Power 5 school, been an offensive coordinator, he might have been able to create some more coaching contacts and bring in a qualified staff, and then he might have been the home run hire that everybody thought he would have been.
Yeah, I think Bill Parcells wanted to hire him as like a tight ends coach. That might have been good for him for a little bit.
Right.
You know,
I mean, look at all the high school coaches from this area. Like, the Sotos coach went to SMU, and he's, you know, assistant coach. You know, they took the guy from Gilmer. He's the tight ends coach at Texas. I just wish, you know, Dodge would have been able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and then you can expand out some of that blame to, you know, the administration, the AD, and everybody, right? You know, like, we're not really built to make, make quality decisions. We're just not really, we don't focus on football as a priority as much as other schools do, and so therefore we're more prone to suffer when we make bad decisions or something like that. I see what you're saying about, like, we're late to the uniform game. Now we got uniforms that look like Marshalls. You know, we were saying, well, we're not changing our helmet when, like we're in Nebraska or something like that. I can see if Nebraska was like, no, we're not changing our helmets. It's, you know, iconic, won a bunch of titles like this. Everybody knows Nebraska football. We're not changing our helmet. But we're North Texas. Like, what, you know, what are we doing out here with the, you know, like, let's get the cool logo out there at least. Yeah, we were a little stubborn on that. We finally changed it. Everybody likes it. And we kind of realized, hey, if we had changed it a couple years ago, maybe more people would have liked our helmet. Yeah, we're late to the game. But that said, you're right about the roster and things like that. We have an old-school coach, and I've said this before. I think it did wonders for the program because, as we just discussed, we were in the hands of a guy that was ill-prepared to coach at the D1 level. And so we handed the reins to a guy now who knows how to do such a thing. He knows how to coach at this level, or at least did successfully for a long period of time. Now, will he change with the times? Will he keep up with the trends? Will he, you know, still make things happen? I don't know. That's kind of what we're seeing here. I think, obviously, it's way too early to be like, oh, Dan McCartney sucks. Let's get him out of here, get a better coach. I don't know what coach would get in here that would do a better job than Dan McCartney has done. I think he's great for the program, but that's one of his weaknesses. He's a little old school in that approach, I think that can kind of hold us back. And that's kind of what we need to. That's what big question mark this season. I think
Dan, right.
Was it Mike Canales? He can coach a good offense. If you look at some of the crazy run games, like under with Lance Dunbar had some of. That was without a quarterback, basically. He was running out wide receivers as quarterbacks. I mean, yeah, some of that just, like, outrageous talent, but, you know, he was putting guys in positions to do some things. So, I don't know. What do you think about that? What is that, aside from the quarterback question, isn't that the biggest question that we have?
Yeah, I think, you know, our offense has to get with the times. We are way, way behind everybody else, and we have this theory, and I talked about it on Inside the Numbers this week, that, you know, we can become a Boise State by playing the way that we have been, and we can't. We have to get noticed. And, you know, I love defense. I know a lot of the fans love the 2013 defense that we had, but consistently being in the top 20 in defense won't get you noticed nationally. You have to score 40 points plus a game. You have to put big points on the board. You have to have the explosive offense. And if we want to get to, you know, be a TCU someday, or, you know, get to that, at least the next step, next level, our offense has to get better. And Coach McCartney has to let the offense open up. I don't know, you know, how exactly they're going to do that, how they get the explosiveness. I think it'll probably start with the run game first, because everything starts with the run game here. But, I mean, we just got to have more fun on the field. We just look like we're just too boring. You go to the game and you sit in the stands and you're like, okay, here we go. You know, we're in two tight end set with one wide receiver out there, fullback. I guess we're just going to run it up the middle and see what happens.
I think, yeah, there's a difference between effective and predictable. I mean, like, if you're predictable, I think you're less effective. Unless you're just really good at what you do. Like, if you're really good at executing, then even though you're predictable, you're still, you know, very effective. That's kind of real subtle there, whatever. Like, you know, if you line up in two tight end sets and say, we're going to just run it down your throats, and you can run it down their throat, like if you're Wisconsin or something like that, then, you know, you don't really need to trick them. Very much. I think you bring it down the numbers there. Towards the end of last season, ahead of the final game at UTSA, I was looking at the offense because we were talking a lot. Like, man, this offense sucked. Well, then I looked to see how bad was it. Well, it was the worst that we'd had in like the previous 6 years. I didn't go back further because I didn't have a lot of those numbers. But also, you know, I just kind of really comparing different eras there. This is a more wide open kind of time in like 2008. You know, till now. So in the last, like, it was like the worst offense ever in terms of yards per game, passing yards per game, even the run game. We had like worse passing offenses. Like, again, that time when Riley Dodge and Chase Bain were out there trying to throw the football while also being, you know, sacked. Yeah, and we had a more productive run game. Some of that, again, was Lance Dunbar. We couldn't run the ball, and so it put even more pressure on an anemic pass game.
Right, yeah. 4.9 yards per play last year.
Yeah.
And 4.7 yards per play in conference. That's terrible. But that's last year. What are your feelings about this year, this offense? You know, we've heard from the coaching staff. We've seen a little bit in the spring game. It looks like they're going to be more open. You know, there are going to be a lot more spread sets, probably a little bit more tempo out there. It fits the skill set of the skill players that we have. So what are your feelings about where our offense will be this year?
Well, I mean, I'll start by saying, didn't we kind of – I mean, I don't know. It just seems like weird that we weren't doing that already. I know. Like, we had a bunch of young guys already. It was Andrew McNulty, Josh Greer, and then, you know, the freshman sensation out there. And we're like, well, we're going to just, you know, go deep into the playbook. And then once Josh Greer and Andy McNulty got benched, basically, they're like, well, I guess we'll simplify the playbook now a little bit. And I was like, why wasn't it really simple beforehand when we have, like, three guys that were kind of unfamiliar? So I guess that's my question now. How simple is this going to be? I know Andrew McNulty knows the playbook inside and out, and that's one of his strengths. But we don't need all the plays. We don't need to go out there with all the plays. We need to have some effective plays. He looked really comfortable against UTSA. UTSA was one of the better talented defense that we played. So that's kind of really what I'm judging him on, because he was up and down towards the end of last season. He was consistent, but within that, there was kind of he had a really decent game, and he had a, you know, pretty poor game. We just need to get the ball to the playmakers. If that means short stuff and Andy McNulty can just quickly assess the defense, get it out, and get into their hands, I'm fine with that. And occasionally throw the deep ball, because we're going to need to stretch them. Then I'm fine. I think we'll be okay. I feel sorry for Carlos Harris. He's on the Biletnikoff list. He's on the Paul Hornung list. And he really is the latest incarnation of, you know, the talented wide receiver who is going to, you know, has no help around him, really. It's the Breland Chancellor a little bit, except he can't be Breland because Darvin Kinsey's basically taking his punt return duties. But he's Casey Fitzgerald. He's Johnny Quinn, who, like, comprised, like, 70% of the offense or something ridiculous like that. You know, it was some of those years Casey Fitzgerald was putting up crazy numbers, like 18 catches, 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, because he's, like, the only guy that would throw him the ball, and he'd make everything happen. I'd like to not have that this season, you know what I mean? It makes it hard. So I'm excited about T. Gore, some of the other guys out there. But I was kind of excited about our weapons the last season. I thought we had some good guys out there that can do some things. So, I don't know. The quarterback is still a question mark, in as much as, you know, we can't shoot ourselves in the foot.
Right.
So that's it.
What do you think? With me, I feel like, you know, it's all going to be dependent on the offensive line and can we run the football. If we can run the football out of the shotgun, because I think we're going to be a lot more gun spread sets this year, like I said. If we can run the football, I think we can be explosive, because I think Jeffrey Wilson, the coaching staff's high on him. I bought a lot of stock in him. I think he's one of the best or most talented running backs, great potential that we've had in a long time. And can he stay healthy? I think that's the biggest thing with him. And can't forget about Jimerson and everything that he's done, 22 touchdowns in his career. You know, the wide receivers that we have, yes, you know, we really only have Carlos Harris. Everybody else is kind of a question mark. But we see the potential there. We know that they were, you know, recruited or highly recruited, like a T. Gore and the coaching staff. They talked him up all offseason. They said, you know, our offense, you know, is going to be better because we're counting on Rutherford and Gore, and they're going to provide more plays for us. And then the tight end position, Marcus Smith, you know, he showed in the spring game that he's gotten better. He's probably the most, you know, NFL-ready prospect we have on our team. Can he improve his catching, you know? So we have enough guys that I think that, you know, could make our offense better. But I think, again, it comes down to the quarterback position. And whether it's McNulty or DeMarcus Smith, you know, whoever wins that battle, I know Josh Greer's listed at number two, but nobody really believes that he will be number two once the season starts. So, you know, how long can McNulty hold off, you know, DeMarcus Smith?
I think it's good. It's good to have, I mean, because, like, honestly, Andrew McNulty's getting this position by default. You know, not again. You know, everybody. I swear, every time we talk about this guy, everybody has to qualify it. You know, like, he's not a bad guy. I don't hate him. I mean, the thing is, like, he was pretty mediocre at quarterback. I mean, compared to everybody else out there, you know, like, he's getting to 200 yards a game, and a lot of people on the message board was like, well, you know, that's amazing. You got to really praise his work ethic. I'm like, that's cool, but we're in an era where dudes just regularly, you know, toss up 300-400 yards a game. So you got, you know, you got to take it in context. It was good that he was not turning the ball over like the freshman sensation was. But he's gone, like you said. So I don't know. I think we need some big plays from the offense, because I don't know that we can grind the ball, you know, up and down the field, 8-9 play drives all the time. We should be able to do that sometimes against the lesser teams. But I think we're going to have to rely on big plays from Carlos Harris, Wilson, Jimerson. And, you know, I would like to see what some of the redshirt freshman receivers have. That's how I think we'll score. I mean, that's really the question, right? How do we score touchdowns? How are we scoring touchdowns this season?
I don't feel like we're talking about the Browns. How are they going to score touchdowns? Well, yeah, I'm going to tell you how they're going to score touchdowns, Adam. They're going to cross the damn goal line with the ball in their hands, 6 points on the board. Doesn't matter.
I like that. So the thing, right, you know, we're talking about comparing to 2013, one of the most successful football season that we've had in, you know, a while. How did we score touchdowns there? Well, turns out we were actually scoring touchdowns with the defense. Defense was blocking your kicks, scoring touchdowns. Well, that's special teams. Or they were intercepting the ball, returning it back. Or they were creating short fields so the offense didn't have to put together a 12-play drive. They were just punching it in from right there. You know, it's a whole team. It's a team effort. I think last season the defense was a little more porous, but the offense didn't really lend them a hand at all. So then it combined for an awful season. And the handful of games where the offense looked kind of competent, the defense would look kind of meh. We were pretty average, but the offense was pretty below average.
So to finish on the offense, are you taking Andrew McNulty to start more games this year or DeMarcus Smith?
I think Andrew McNulty starts more games this year.
Does he finish the season as the starter?
Yes. But I don't rule out a little blip in between where maybe Andrew McNulty, I don't know, tweaks something. And it's 12 straight weeks, man. And then like somewhere like towards the late middle, we have Tennessee, you know. There's just some big dudes in the SEC. So I don't rule out, you know, a sub at quarterback.
So you're not on the DeMarcus Smith bandwagon, starting against SMU, taking us back to a bowl game, the JUCO rides in, saves the day. I mean, everybody's on that train.
I mean, I'd like to be on the train. I just don't think that Dan McCarney, you know, I know who's driving this train, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, like, I know that train ain't taking us there. I mean, yeah, that's the deal. It's, I think he reluctantly, you know, put in the guy we all wanted last season. So, and that was, you know, it was like when it was the worst passing game in the history of North Texas football. Then he was like, well, I guess maybe we'll probably start. But I don't know. Let's see what they do against La Tech first. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what happened. So whatever. Here's this. I went to the 2007 game against SMU. It was North Texas at SMU. And Daniel Meager threw for like 600 yards. 300 plus were to Casey Fitzgerald in the most ridiculous offensive display I had ever seen with my own two eyes. And I'm kind of hoping for a repeat of that. I mean, the things kind of line up the same. Coming off a bad offensive season. Quarterback, question marks at quarterback position. How do we score? Promise to be more open and spread. And, you know, at SMU. It all lines up, man. It all lines up.
So there is your bold prediction, folks. Adam is saying that McNulty is going to come out and throw for 400 yards against SMU. You write that down. Whenever you see this guy walking on the streets, you're going to say, that's the guy that lied to me.
Siri, remind me to beat Adam Zanis. He lied. I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. That's my, you know, my hope for the year. You know, we're talking about... are you hopeful? The grass is green, you know, sun is shining. The records are at 0-0, right? Well, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about how that one, it was great to see. It was a great breath of fresh air after such a horrible offensive season the year previous. And so I'm kind of hoping that we have something similar. I don't need to see 600 yards in a losing effort from the quarterback, but I'm going to say 300. Give me 300 yards, you know. Let's score some touchdowns over there. Let's make them all cry, and as they walk back to the Bentleys. You know, let's do that.
Yeah, I go. Well, you know, SMU's got a pretty terrible defense. I mean, they suffered a lot of injuries last year, and they sucked, and we beat them down early in the season. I don't know if Andrew McNulty can throw for 300 against them. I just don't know. I don't think we're going to throw the ball that much against them. I think we're going to run a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, here's the thing. He throws a little short slant, little bubble screen, little quick hitter to Carlos Harris. He gets a couple blocks, takes it to the house. You know? There's 45 yards right there. We don't need Andy stepping back and, you know, displaying his arm strength. We don't need him to be John Elway, you know? Just need him to be Cliff Kingsbury out here.
Yeah, you don't need all that in, you know, college spread offense. You need a guy who's efficient and effective, like you were talking about earlier. I think DeMarcus Smith's going to end up starting more games than McNulty. I think that he's going to put in the work off the field that Dejon didn't do, and I think while he's not the, you know, athlete that Dejon is...
Wait, Tom, you notice I never said Dejon Williams' name? You can't speak his name, man. He's not on a team anymore.
Okay, well... The freshman sensation.
Yeah.
He's not as athletic as that kid was, but he's a better passer. I think that he's more highly rated coming out of high school. I think that if you look at the numbers that he put up at Butler Community College last year, there's no reason he can't do similar type of stuff for North Texas this year. I'm not saying he's going to throw 32, 31 touchdowns, but his completion percentage, that shouldn't really change when he gets here. And if he's able to give us, you know, 15, 17 touchdown passes and only 10 interceptions, we may be able to get back to a bowl game.
So, all right, what is your ideal end of season stat line? It's like something like 200 completions, like 2,500 yards, 17 touchdowns?
Yeah, because I don't think he's going to start right away. I think his touchdowns... I mean
from the quarterback position, just period.
From the quarterback?
Yeah.
You know, I had this written down somewhere. And I'm going to post it, and I haven't gotten around to it because I got busy. I think it was like, you know, I had DeMarcus Smith throwing 15 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. His completion percentage, I think I had it like 59%. I want to say like, you know, 2,700 yards, 2,500 yards, somewhere around there from the quarterback position.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, you kind of, the post you did where you're kind of like, hey, is Andrew McNulty going to be Derek Thompson?
Dan McCartney, you know, he throws it out there saying he can make that jump, and everybody's like, oh, hold on a second, bro, hold on a second. And I'm like, well, let's look at the numbers. Let's see how far he would have to go. And, I mean, it's pretty high that he'd have to make the jump. And then you're talking about he doesn't have the experience that, you know, Thompson had. I think that's the biggest thing. Is Derek Thompson, he went on the road at Kansas State and played well. He played well against, you know, big schools. Yeah. McNulty doesn't have that type of experience to lean on.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Derek Thompson was that he'd show flashes of brilliance, right, where he'd go to Kansas State, throw a couple touchdown passes, and we're like, wow, that was amazing. And then he'd come out against Troy and stink it up. You know, and you're like, where is the consistency there? And that I mean, that's evident in his stat line, right? His junior year, 14 TDs, 14 interceptions. His senior year, 16 TDs, 13 interceptions. I mean, which you can probably say maybe one or two, you know, extra. I think like the bowl game, then he had like 3 touchdown passes or something like that. So it was like negative. These numbers are really similar because we played an extra game. We played 2 extra games, right? I think
one
extra game the senior mm-hmm. year, and you know he had like less than 200 more yards than he did the over his junior year. So stuff like that makes me say again that Derek Thompson didn't really make a huge jump to the senior year. He just kind of played Derek Thompson football. We just had a better team. And I think the reason I bring that up a lot is because I think the quarterback makes the team is really a simplistic argument that we had an excellent, ridiculously awesome defense and special teams that season. And I think I'd like to see more of that than anything else. I agree with you, though. I'm talking about like nobody comes out to see defense.
How do you feel about this year's defense? You know, are you concerned about, you know, we're the defensive line, the linebackers? I know we added a pretty good kid yesterday that committed to us. The Darian McNair linebacker kid. I don't know if he'll get to play this year, but I mean, he's a stud.
I think Vito said that he's eligible this season.
Yeah, he's eligible to play. I mean, he's just kind of coming in late, so yeah. he's a stud athlete. We'll just put it there.
I mean,
and he's got to play linebacker.
I think you can get those guys and get them out there on special teams, and then I mean, you get them out there on special teams, and again, 12 straight weeks of football. I think probably sometime around October he should be good enough with the playbook, the defensive playbook, to get in, you know, a couple series against like Western Kentucky or something like that. All right, first I'm going to ask you a question before I answer yours. When is DeMarcus Smith getting out here and playing football?
When?
Yeah, SMU, Rice, Iowa, Southern Miss, Portland State, like when, you know?
I'm going to say that the Rice game.
Jeez.
Because I have them beating Rice, so
okay.
I think he gets out there and plays against Rice.
All right, so like just plays or he like starts and takes over the position?
I think he doesn't start, but he plays second half.
Okay, all right, that's fine. All right, so when does he – we're like, okay – DeMarcus Smith is our quarterback. Sorry, Andy, you're getting benched yet again. When does that happen?
The second half against Rice.
All right, so are we benching Andy because he's terrible out there against Rice, or because we're just like, wow, we're whooping them, and then, wow, DeMarcus Smith is just awesome?
I think that somebody comes on a blindside blitz hurts. Yeah. I mean, he took a lot of hits last year, so I don't want to – I hope he doesn't get hurt. I'm sorry I said that. But, look, I just think DeMarcus Smith is better than Andrew McNulty. So I'm going to say that in the second game that he takes over. And we roll with it. And we beat Rice. Because okay. I don't think Rice is that good anyways.
Yeah, Rice is not that good this season. That's interesting. Okay, so to answer your question about the defense, how good are we? I don't know. We're not as good as the 2013 defense. That had a beast of a defensive line, and I don't think we have that still. We have some talent there. We're a little undersized, so that's going to hurt us. We're not going to be able – like, one of the big problems – that stuff you saw last season when, like, they consistently ran it down our throats, and so we were stepping up. The secondary was stepping up, and then they just hit us with a play action, or they just went over the top straight up. That's going to happen again. You'll see some of that, especially if we go down early or something. Or the, you know, I always think about that Louisiana Tech game because I think we were good enough to beat Louisiana Tech. We just didn't really have – we didn't start out right, and then the offense, you know, bungled
things. Are you saying last year we couldn't beat Louisiana? Oh, man is just crazy.
No. We were – that was when we still believed, you know, we if things were only different. If we had a better quarterback out there. If we had better quarterback play, let's just say that, not a better quarterback. If we had better quarterback play, I think if you grab Andy McNulty in the UTSA game and plop him in, you know, back in time into that Louisiana Tech game, it's a much closer game.
It's a closer game, but we still lose by 14.
Maybe not. I don't know. There was a couple, like, we got a couple of interceptions on that dude. I forget his name. The guy with the hair. And, yeah.
I think that was
him. Yeah, Cody, right? Yeah, we got a couple of interceptions on the guy. I think we just got tired out. The defense was really tired by the end of the game because they were on the field for most of the game. Anyway, let's quit talking about the past. So I think it's going to be something like that. That we have a good enough defense. If we have a lead or we're in close to the game, that can make some plays. Kenny Byers is one of my favorite players. He's a hammer. He makes things happen. Hopefully he's worked on his, you know, his deep coverage. Keyshawn McClain is awesome. Also, the other safety spot, I'd like to see, you know, what happens, you know, when he gets out in the game. Everybody likes the way he plays. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. I don't feel bad about the defense. I don't feel like this is going to be a record-setting kind of defense. Obviously, the whole middle linebacker shuffle that we have going on is concerning. I do like that Blake Bean played. He played under Chris Kosh, right?
Yeah, at Buffalo.
Yeah, so that's good. I think that's kind of why we moved Fred Scott over, among other things, other reasons. Move him over. Get a guy that knows the defense inside and out. Everybody likes this guy, Blake Bean. But I think the talent is Anthony Wallace. I think we have talent in linebacker, but I'm waiting to see which guy is going to step up and be the next, you know, great North Texas linebacker, the next Derek Okune, the next you know, Toby Nwigwe, the next Zach Orr. Who's that guy? I don't know. We don't usually we can kind of pick him out by now. Now we're like, well, you know, we have talent. You know, Courtney Finney's real talented. Anthony Wallace is really talented. Blake Bean is a smart guy, but there's not one of those guys you're like, that guy is our guy and our defensive leader.
Right. Yeah, that could be a problem. Who's the leader on the defense? I think another big storyline for the defense this year is all the JUCO players that are, you know, being asked to come in and contribute right away. You're looking at Jared Combs, the defensive end, Finney at linebacker, Gray, the safety. Who's the other defensive back that was coming in? Started with a G. I can't think of his name right off the bat. Oh, Xavier Grindle. Yeah. They're expecting him to come in.
He's
and
not
play
even listening
right
too deep right now. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of the JUCOs that, you know, are coming in the summer, they're not going to be listening on the too deep. So, I mean, they're expecting a lot of the JUCO guys to come in and play big minutes for them this year. And we know that some of those guys aren't going to work out very well. They're, you know, it's just how JUCOs go. But I think that's the big storyline is, you know, the JUCO infusion on the defense.
Yeah. I mean, best case scenario, it's like Kansas State. You're like, who are these guys? How are they already a junior? You know, like, oh, they're a JUCO transfer. And then, you know, we're a stout defense. I mean, you know, Chris Kosh, his CV there touts his experience at Kansas State. So hopefully we replicate some of that. Worst case scenario, you know, the team doesn't gel. Guys that we really need to step up don't, and it's pretty awful.
Who are you most excited about to see on the defense? Like, what player are you like, oh man, I want to see this guy ball out this year?
Jamal Marshall? Is that weird?
No, it's not weird because, I mean, I know what you're feeling. You're feeling like this guy could be like Richard Sherman right here.
I mean,
this huge corner?
Something like that. Well, it's mostly, you know, like, yeah, it's like the culmination of a bunch of things. He's played at different spots on the defense. And I always like guys that do that because they bring a different perspective. It's not just like, well, I know what I do in my spot. They understand. And so I think we're going to see some good stuff from him just from that perspective. And, you know, also it's an infusion of speed and size out there on the corners. And I think it was kind of a question where James Jones played really well last season. So I was kind of concerned, like, who's going to be the next guy over there? You know, like, who's going to step up and lock the other side down? Because it makes everything else that much easier. You remember that video I posted with Kenny Byers and how I was talking about how he's – those tackles are, like, they are huge tackles. That they just kind of show up. You're like, oh, that was a good tackle. But, you know, it's second and seven, and you don't really think about that. But – In the story of a drive, that usually kills a drive. It's those things, those quick hitters to the outside that they dance around the corner and they get up and get 7-8 yards. That's what keeps drives alive. That's a big part of a certain team's offense. And when you can make a tackle, at the catch, that's huge. And then you get a guy like Jamal Marshall. They throw it out there. I think he can do the next step, which is either make an interception or cause a fumble out there. Kenny Byers did a great job making the tackle. James Jones did a great job jumping the routes. And I'd like to see what Jamal Marshall has in terms of making a hit, causing a fumble, or making a hit and making the ball pop up and somebody else grabs the interception. So that's kind of what I want to see. Does that make sense? You agree with that?
I agree with that. I think my biggest player I want to see is how much improvement does Keyshawn McClain make? Because I thought he'd play a lot last year. I thought he'd start a few games, and he did. And he's a really athletic person. So I want to see how much of a jump does he make from his freshman to his sophomore year? Because I think he's the type of guy that could grab a leadership role on the defense. And can he provide, that Marcus Trice type of leadership out there? Can he be a playmaker on defense? You know, we're looking for guys like, we lost to Kune. We lost, a lot of playmakers over the past 2 years, and we're in search of them this year. And I think McClain can be a playmaker on defense.
Yeah, I mean, he was – I think we kind of hyped him as kind of like a Laramie Lee type, make some big hits. I mean, but every free safety is kind of – going to get some big hits out there, but I agree. I think that's a good one to watch. I mean, I'm mostly concerned about the secondary. I feel like, that's kind of a make or break thing for us. Just like a bellwether type thing on teams where we've not have had good. Let me start over. The defenses that we've had that being inconsistent have usually been pretty porous in the secondary. I think we've always pretty much been able to kind of corral the run in one way or another. I mean, you can always just throw more bodies at the run. And that may go hand in hand. You have to throw more bodies at it so you get beat over the top. But I just remember like Arkansas State tearing us up because we were pretty poor at tackling and we were not good defending the deep routes. And this was like 3 years ago. And then the following season, we really shored that up. We stuck Kenny Byers out there, and, what's his name came into his own? Safety. You just said his name.
Marcus Trice.
Yeah, Marcus Trice. Really came into his own, stopped making some of the crazy mistakes, and started, making plays. And then I think it all kind of flowed. Everybody played well, each section, each grouping. I don't know. I feel like that's the thing. It's like we're getting beat over the top. I think that says a lot about the defense. Obviously, it all starts at the line. That's really the most important part. But I feel like if other teams feel that your defense, secondary is weak, then it doesn't even matter how good your defensive line is because they could just stand back there and throw quick hitters or just like stop and then throw fade routes. And then, everybody just gets tired and frustrated.
I think with this year's defense, the biggest thing, I think they're going to be a good pass rushing team. I like Chad Polk can get after the passer. We know Roberts can get after the passer. We brought in the sack guy Jared Combs, who can get after the passer. Tillman Johnson, when healthy, there's good things being said about him. We know he can get after the passer. So we got guys that rush the passer. Can we stop the run? Can we stop those teams from, making it a third down and four, third down and three, where it's difficult for you? You have to defend against the run and the pass. Can we get them in those third and longs and let our pass rushers pin their ears back and go? And I think the big part is the defensive tackles. Who's going to step up in those roles? We have the what's his name, the Polynesian guy.
Yeah.
I can't Talu.
Yeah. TJ Tualau.
Yeah. And Mustafa Habul's listed above him, and Austin Oren said more. I like the freshman that's coming in, the D'Amico Henderson guy.
Yeah.
Who was the other guy that was a lot of Sir Calvin Wallace?
Right.
He wasn't listed up there, but he may have some conditioning issues. So
Yeah.
Can we stop the run up the middle, and can we stop the run on the outside too? Because I know a lot of times last year it just seemed like our defensive ends got pushed around and teams were easily able to get around the edge.
Yeah, yeah, I think about like Indiana just running all over us. And UTEP. UTEP just killed us with that. Couple things. All right, so SMU, I mean, they were – do they have the personnel to run the kind of offense that Chad Morris wants to run? I don't know. I mean, he's kind of a mix-it-up kind of guy, multiple kind of guy, like Dana Holgorsen likes to say. But they were mostly a throwing team last season. Then we got Rice. Rice likes to run the ball. They do a little mix, but they do like to run the ball. Iowa, it's kind of – it's a Big Ten team. They like to run the ball. Southern Miss, they mix it up, but I think they got a good quarterback there. Portland State likes to throw the ball, but, you know, lower division team. Western Kentucky, they will throw the ball all over us. Marshall, they will try to throw the ball all over us. UTSA, I think they kind of suck this season. And they are technically a multiple team. I don't know what they're going to come out with. But they ran the ball a lot better than they should have against us last season. By October 31st, we'll be a totally different team than we will be on, in September, come September 12th. So it's kind of weird to project all the way out there. Then we got Louisiana Tech. They like to run the ball, but, you know, they can throw it. Who's their quarterback now? They got the guy from Florida, right?
Yeah, Driscoll. Driscoll.
Yeah. He can run. He's a threat out to run. And then, obviously, Tennessee is like a whole different caliber of team. Middle Tennessee likes to throw the ball. UTEP will run the ball. I think of that whole slate, just ran down the whole schedule, there's only two teams that I think would give us – that really just like line up and say we want to run down the middle. And that's like UTEP and I'm going to say Louisiana Tech.
I'm going to Rice is going to be a full-on running team.
Yeah, but I don't know. Are they going to run down the middle or are they going to try to get around the edge?
I think they're going to run right at us. They have good running backs. They're going to run that zone read, zone offense. Iowa's going to run right at us.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. I'm discounting the Iowa and okay. Tennessee because, you know, they're just – it's a totally different conversation.
I think Middle Tennessee might be a team that runs right at us. I agree with you, Louisiana Tech will. Marshall's going to spread us out, but I think they're going to surprise people. They're going to run the ball more than you think.
Yeah,
and Western Kentucky, they have a really great quarterback, but they run the ball well too, so it doesn't matter what we do against them.
Well, I think some teams are like they run well, like Marshall and Western Kentucky run really, really well because they throw really well. I mean, last season they were throwing for 400 yards a game, and so whenever they turn around and just, you know, do the draw play, you're surprised at it because you're trying to defend the pass.
Right.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, and Southern Miss, they're going to be a passing team. So, and SMU, I don't think they're going to be a passing team, too. They lost, Daniel Gresham at running back.
Yeah.
He was one of their running backs. He quit the team yesterday because of injuries. So, yeah, they're probably going to throw the ball more than run. Yeah, UTEP, you know, they're going to run it right at us, too. So, it's still going to be an issue. The defensive tackle, we need somebody there that can at least shore up the middle. And then a lot of the other teams, you know, Middle Tennessee, Rice, they're still going to try and beat us around the edges because you have the mobile quarterbacks that they're going to have. So,
yeah. So in that sense, I mean, I don't really feel so concerned that we're a little bit undersized at the defensive tackle position. Like you said, we have some guys with some size. But... you know, can this whole grouping of guys, we're going to do a lot of rotation, can they basically make up for the fact that we're going to be giving up, you know, 30, 40 pounds sometimes? Maybe even more in some cases, like 50. Someone, I think, isn't somebody like 265 or something like that?
Something on the ridiculous. Defensive line?
Yeah, somebody.
Or yeah. A defensive tackle.
Defensive tackle.
The young kid who started last year against Texas, Sid Moore. He's 262.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's going to be giving up like 100 pounds to somebody. It's concerning, but, you know, it might work in our favor, you know. Hopefully we have enough quickness to make up for it, get to the quarterback. You know, like I said, this is what we're talking about. We're not going to get guys that are prototypical defensive tackles here at North Texas. Alabama gets all those dudes. LSU gets all those dudes. So we're going to have to make do with guys that are a little undersized, but that can still play some football. And I think we have that. And so I'm not so concerned. I don't. We didn't really get blasted off the ball last season in all the games. Sometimes I think it was a little bit of resignation on our part. We're like, well, you know, we can't score, or we turn the ball over again in our own territory, and so now we have to stop everybody again. I mean, right. If you look at the reactions to turnovers against, say, like Texas in the first game of the season when we still had a lot to play for versus, like, say, UTEP or something like that, it's completely different. And I think some of that is just people just being tired. Just being, yeah, they're like, well, I mean, I can give everything I have, but it's not really going to make much of a difference. It's very human nature of us, right?
Right. So, you know, we were talking a little bit about the schedule already.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts as a whole on it? I mean, it's obviously, I think it's the toughest conference schedule that we've had since McCartney's been here.
Yeah, first time we get Marshall. I was, you know, we didn't get Marshall or ECU last couple seasons, some of the better teams in the East. And, you know, now we do. Is Louisiana Tech as good as they were last year? They're picked to win again. I don't know. I think UTEP's going to be pretty good. It is very tough. I agree. And also, I mean, obviously, I don't like having to go play Tennessee in November. That's just weird. I don't like that kind of. I like to keep all the non-conference stuff at the beginning and then conference stuff at the end. I don't like taking a little stop. Let's stop now and go to Tennessee.
Yeah. My bold, like, just crazy drink the green Kool-Aid prediction would be DeMarcus Smith, if he beats McNulty and he starts at SMU, I could conceivably see them beating SMU, beating Rice, beating Iowa, beating Southern Miss, beating Portland State, coming in undefeated for a Thursday night against Western Kentucky.
What? I mean, just looking at, I think we can get 6 wins, and then, you know, there's like a coin flip, but there will be a chance in other ones. I think we can definitely get 6 wins. It's possible. We can beat SMU. They're going to be good, but I don't think they're going to be good in September on the 12th. You know, like, eventually I think Chad Moore is going to do good with them. I don't know about what you're saying there. That seems kind of too much green Kool-Aid for me. I think we beat SMU. We can beat Rice at home. We're probably going to lose to Iowa, definitely. Southern Miss is going to be tough to beat in Hattiesburg, but we beat them before. So it's 1-2 wins, just giving us wins off the top against SMU and Rice. We definitely should beat Portland State, 3 wins. Western Kentucky at home, we can win against them. So I'll go ahead and say that's a win. We'll lose at Marshall. We should beat UTSA at home. That's 5 wins. Louisiana Tech is going to be too tough for us. And Ruston, Tennessee is going to be too tough. Middle Tennessee is tough at home. And I think we can beat UTEP at home. There's your 6 wins.
If I'm, you know, I wasn't being logical by saying that, you know, yeah, we'll win all those. But yeah. I think it could happen. I think those are all winnable games. I don't think going to Iowa is as tough as a lot of people think. I think they play slow, and they're not like a lot of the I don't think they're going to really overpower us. So I think I'm going to say the SMU game is probably a toss-up. I think we beat Rice, probably lose to Iowa, lose to Southern Miss, beat Portland State, lose to Western Kentucky, lose to Marshall, beat UTSA, lose to Louisiana Tech, lose to Tennessee, lose to Middle Tennessee, and I think it would be tough to beat UTEP at home.
Yeah.
I think we're somewhere around 5 or 4 wins again.
See, that makes sense, and that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, I don't think, like, if we had some of these other teams in our place, maybe we could beat, if we had Southern Miss at home, we could probably beat them. But I think on the road, it's going to be tough. We just don't play well on the road under Dan McCartney. And so that's why I'm saying, like, our two big games, Thursday against Western Kentucky, October 15th, and then, you know, to end the season against UTEP. Those are two teams that we probably can't, we're going to be underdogs against. but we have the advantage of being at home. And I think that's a good thing, especially on a short week there, right? The turnaround from Portland State, we're not going to be really tested against them, against Portland State. We should just whoop the shit out of them. So we'll be rested. And then, you know, we get Western Kentucky at home. Who did they play that previous week? Let me check. Maybe they have a bye. They play Middle Tennessee.
And that's a tough game for them.
Yeah. So I think, you know, let's hope that they have another epic showdown like they did last season. Then they go to, like, triple overtime or something. Middle and Western.
Oh, I can't remember. Yeah, they might have. And yeah, so, I think you're right.
Hopefully something like that happens. They're all drained, and they come to Denton, and we, you know, we put the hurting on them. And everybody's like, whoa, is North Texas for real? They just beat Western Kentucky. And then we deal with all that. So that's what I'm saying. Then UTEP at the end of the season, there's no real reason to think that we should beat them other than that we're at home. You know? Like, they were a good team. If we're like, we're at 5 wins and we're playing for a bowl game, I don't see why we can't get up for that game. That's going to be everything there. And say, this will get us at 6 wins and put us in the conversation to get a bowl game, especially if we did well against Tennessee and Iowa, maybe give them a game. I could see that happening.
Yeah. For me, the most important game of the season is the Rice game after the SMU game. And I could almost say the SMU game, too, because we want to start off well. But I think the Rice game at home, first conference game again, if we can, you know, if we can beat SMU and we can beat Rice to start off with, I think that starts that trend then that I was talking about with the green Kool-Aid. I think that this team, if they beat those two teams and they get that confidence rolling in them, there's no reason they couldn't go to Iowa and, you know, maybe pull off an upset. There's no reason they couldn't go to Southern Miss and win and then beat Portland State at home. And then you get to the Thursday night game and it sets it up for a big primetime showdown. even if we go to Iowa, we lose a close game and we're sitting there with only one loss, but we're undefeated in conference and you get Western Kentucky at home, Thursday night game, that's a huge showdown. So I think everything starts and ends with that Rice game, getting it rolling.
I agree. I think there's a lot riding on those first two games for a lot of reasons. The SMU game is huge because it's SMU, because it's the first game of the season, and because it starts out on the road, right? It's all these things wrapped up in it. Like, this is the first time we saw North Texas football since, you know, they basically gave the game away against UTSA, a terrible UTSA team, you know, down the road. So it's like, what do you got? You're terrible on the road, Dan McCarney, you know, step up your game up. And so, you know, this is a big chance to show that, hey, I see you, Chad Morris, but we still got this rivalry right now. You know what I mean? It's a lot of going into that game. And then obviously I think the Rice one is big too. They beat us at home. They beat us away last season, right? They whooped us pretty bad. And then we beat them famously on Halloween night 2 seasons ago, national television, kicked off our whole, we became bowl eligible, everybody was drinking the Kool-Aid, stands are full, people were high-fiving, videos were made, you know, stuff was happening.
Absolutely.
So I agree, I think it'll be a statement. Wouldn't it be great if that happened, say we pull off a miracle upset in Iowa, and then we go to Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and we pull off another lesser upset. And then we beat the shit out of Portland State. 5-0, head into the Thursday night matchup against Western Kentucky. Oh, my God.
See, now you're starting to think it. It's starting to click in your head. You're like, huh, that doesn't sound too crazy.
I mean, if we didn't have the gaping hole at quarterback last season, I thought we could have done, you know, the same thing last season. I thought if there was ever time to beat Texas, it was then. New coach. You know, they're on shaky ground, and they didn't even play that well. They didn't play that well.
You know, if we would have been able to face them the next week without David Ash, maybe we could have beat them.
Yeah.
No, our offense would have still sucked.
Yeah, that was it. It was so disappointing to realize that you just didn't have a whole left hand, basically. You know what I mean? You're like, what the hell? I thought you know, you drop anybody, you drop, like I said, Andy McNulty from the final game at UTSA in there against Texas, drop him in against Louisiana Tech, things will be different.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. I think they still would have got their ass beat by Texas.
They lost, what, 31-7?
That's an ass whooping. If you, nah.
They had no offense, like zero pass game, and yet they, you know, I mean, like Texas should have ran all over them, and they ran okay against a tired North Texas defense. We were stuffing them early. We were stuffing them, making them make plays. You know what I mean? They I think their second drive, they it was extended because of an iffy pass interference call. That's what I'm saying, man. We were there.
It's last year. It's over with. We sucked. We didn't have a quarterback. And this is a whole new year. This is a whole new team. I'm forgetting about what happened then, and we're moving forward right now.
I mean, the problem comes up when I look at a year ago, you know, like my pictures or something like that, and it says, there I was getting ready to go to Texas, to Austin. You know, I was excited. I remember all those feelings.
I remember driving down 35 and going to pick up my dad for the game, and a UT fan passed me, and he threw up the hook 'em horns, and I flicked him off and blew the horn and cut him off. I remember that. So they're all assholes.
It's going to be fun. I think we definitely should set up shop with the podcast and everything and do it there live at SMU. And then again, the next week, I'm going to be there for me in Dallas 2 weekends in a row, September 12th, September 19th.
And that's one thing that we wanted to, you know, get into. You know, Go Mean Green, they have their podcast, and they're going to do, like, a lot of wonderful things. I don't know if you listen to it. You know, they're continuing the Beyond the Green through their podcast and all kinds of cool things. Them. Yeah, we're obviously we're not them. We don't get that access. But what we want to do this year is provide a tailgate podcast, a tailgate style of podcast. For, you know, the fans that it's a Saturday morning, you're out there, you're cooking, and you don't want to listen to the regular college game day, but there's Mean Green Nation that's got a tailgate podcast going on, talking about the game, talking about the previous week, all North Texas stuff. You know, we're going to try to get some interviews in this year with some, you know, maybe not from North Texas people, but we're going to reach out. And, you know, maybe we get somebody from SMU to come let you guys know who to watch out for. So we're going to do things.
There's nobody to watch out for. Somebody watch out for an SMU.
Okay. All right.
No, so I mean, there's a couple guys, like former players and things that we've been trying to get onto the show. But for various reasons, schedules have prevented us from doing so. Theirs and ours. You know, it's not all their fault. And the whole idea is, I mean, that's the whole idea of this thing anyway, this podcast. It's because, I mean, when I started MeanGreenNation.com, a lot of it is because there was nobody to talk to about UNT football at the level I wanted to talk about it with, except, like, on the message board all the time. And, we don't really have the same outlet as, like, you know, the bigger schools or the fan base. You know, you grab anybody and, like, how about the, you know, what's Charlie Strong going to do this year? Like, oh, well, you know, I think the offense is going to be good. And everybody has hot sports opinions about Texas football, as well they should, right? $100 million revenues, whatever. But it's nice to get together with some people that know who Keyshawn McClain is, that know who Josh Greer is. You know what I mean? So that's the whole idea. That's the whole idea. So,
you know, we want to do something different. We want to, you know, Go Mean Green has their avenue, and we want to provide a different avenue for the fans out there. So we're like, tailgate podcast? Hell yeah, because you might be walking past us while we're out there, and you're a fan. You're like, I'm going to jump on with these dudes. I don't know them, but they look cool, and they got some free beer. So hell yeah, I'm going to jump in.
Man, you better chip in with some free beer money there, man. Adam, did you bring these folks to free beer? Hey, wait. So we'll let you know. We'll let you know what's going on. Don't forget you can subscribe to the Mean Green Nation podcast. And also, technically, we have a newsletter. We have an email list, and we've used it infrequently. Usually, I set it up like the end of the week. I'll grab some of the posts we've written that week, send them out just in case you missed it. A link to the podcast, etc., etc. You can subscribe there. I know a couple people that I know were like, you just send me an email, that'd be better than me having to check the site. Whatever. internet the way you internet, man. But yeah, you can subscribe there. MeanGreenNation.com/subscribe. And then you can find out where to subscribe to the podcast, to the site in general. You know, man, we'll send you an email. All that there. You can follow Greg at MGN_breakdown on the Twitters. You can follow me, Mean Green Nation, or ZE_Martino. That's my personal Twitter handle, if you so choose. Is there anything else you want to say, Greg, before we go?
No, that's about it. I'm good.
I'll see you next week then, bright and early, Saturday.
Yeah. No, not next Saturday. We'll try and do it the Saturday after.
Okay. The Saturday after next, which is what? Let's give the people a date. What day are we right now?
22nd.
Why does it say June? My calendar is not even at the right month, guy. Can you believe that? Yeah. 22nd. Unbelievable. Actually, I'll be in Brooklyn during that. I'll bring my laptop. We'll podcast on the road. Hey, right. What do you say? All right. Thanks for listening to Mean Green Nation podcast. For Greg, I'm Adam. Go Mean Green.